Hello. This podcast is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast will invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered this support group, and I've been an active member ever since. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Jenny Boyce. Jenny is part of our Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group, and she's a member of our committee and a great contributor as such. Jenny has South American family connections and hence became a language teacher in Spanish and French. She started her working life at the City of Bath Girls Grammar School, and then when she and her husband and family moved to London, she worked at a pioneering comprehensive school in Putney in southwest London. Then, when her daughter was very young and her husband could babysit, she took a role as a part-time tutor in adult education evening classes. Jenny eventually moved on to become a full-time lecturer in the further education sector in a big further education college in central London, and she finally ended up in a management role in that same college. Jenny was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 7 years ago, and I asked her about her experience from the start to now. Here is her story. I hope you enjoyed this, our maiden episode of Parkinson's Life Raft. Good morning, Jenny. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Viv, and very looking forward to having a little chat about things this morning with you.
We're very glad to have you here this morning. Thank you for your time. Now, I haven't known you for very long, but because of this pandemic, you and I have actually worked a lot together on various projects that we've done for the support group via Zoom. And I've discovered that you're the creative talent and I'm the one that does all the technical bits. And I think we've made a good team, don't you?
I think we make a very good team. Yes, indeed.
Well, I've already spoken about your life before Parkinson's. I'd really appreciate it if you could explain to us, what was your reaction when you got your diagnosis?
Well, you know, it's 7 years ago now, and people didn't know a lot about Parkinson's then. If you think over the last 7 or 8 years, there's been a lot in the press and a lot more publicity about Parkinson's. But back then, it was something which you talked about almost in whispers. It was something rather awful that could happen to some people. So when I had that diagnosis of Parkinson's from the neurologist down at Chelsea Westminster Hospital that day, I felt quite shocked, actually. And I remember going away from the hospital feeling, goodness me, this is going to be life-changing for me. And then you go through a period of bewilderment and disbelief almost. You almost don't want to believe that it's happening. And in my case, I think that it took quite a long time to get over that phase. I think it took me almost a year to come to terms with what was happening to me. And in that time, although I had lovely family around to support me, and I did have a lot of friends, in a strange way, I didn't want to talk about it with anyone. Mm. And I think this is quite common, talking to other people that have recently being diagnosed. Initially, you don't want other people to know that you've got a condition which is going to not get better. Mm. And I I didn't want my friends that I had, my former colleagues and friends that I had in a big choir that I belonged to. I didn't want them to know that I felt that I was becoming someone who would need help and I didn't know how much help I would need. And I think that feeling of secrecy and withdrawal from the world is not a good thing to go through. And it would be much better to talk about it. But that was the way, that's what happened to me. And I can only liken it, I think, to a feeling of bereavement, you know? Mm. It, a feeling of loss, that you're almost grieving for a person that you thought you once were. Yeah. And you're grieving because you think you're going to become someone different. Of course you're not, but that's how I felt at the time. And actually what helped in the end was talking to people on a professional level, like, for example, the Parkinson's nurse, or some people, the dietitian who came to see me, or the Parkinson's advisor. We can talk about Nick in a few moments. But it actually, for me, felt safer to talk about some of my anxieties to people who didn't know me. And I felt as though I was not revealing too much of myself, and it felt safer, more comfortable.
When you got your diagnosis, were you with your husband at the time?
No, because I actually didn't expect that it was going to be anything to do with Parkinson's, you see. Mm. I was referred by my GP. Because, well, I suppose if I had been sensible, I would have realized, because I had an ache in my shoulder and I was losing balance. And of course, now I can look back and think, well, losing balance and an ache in my shoulder and a little bit of a croak in my throat, and that all adds up now, and I would be able to diagnose Parkinson's. But then I didn't. So I went along to the neurologist not expecting it, and perhaps that was a bit naive, but that was the way it was. So I came back to have to tell the family. Mm. And it would have been nice to have had someone with me. So they were very, very supportive. But you in a way, you feel as though you don't want to be less than the mother you were, that the grandmother you are, that the wife you were. Mm. And you think you're going to change, mm. and it's going to be different. Mm. And the other thing was I lost one very important thing, which was very dear to my heart, which was that I started to get a very bad sort of croak in my throat, not my speaking voice, but I used to be very, very keen on singing. Mm. And I belonged to a choir, a large choir. We sang in the Albert Hall. We sang these big, big works like Mahler 8 and the Verdi Requiem. And then I belonged to a smaller chamber choir. And I also did some solo singing, not as a professional. I don't think that for you, but as an amateur, a very keen amateur. And my voice cracked and I realized that I was going to have to drop out of all of the singing. Well, and that really felt a terrible diminishment of my my existence, really. Mm. That was a big loss. And I took a long time to come to terms with the fact that I was going to have to find something to replace that, if you like, in a way of interest. Mm.
Mm. But with the support group that Kensington and Chelsea, there's Skylarks and the wonderful Nicola, who helps everybody in the choir. Did you join the choir there? Was that fun or not?
Well, this was in this period. I was introduced to all sorts of things by our wonderful Nick, our Parkinson's advisor, who I remember coming and sitting in this sitting room here with me. And this was in this first year, about 6 months in, I think I'd been diagnosed, and saying, well, there's a choir, and do you like singing? And do you like, whether you could join a dance class, and you could do a Pilates group, and you could do Tai Chi? And suddenly a whole sort of world of different activities opened up. And I thought, well, I'll try one thing or another. Not the choir to begin with, because actually I went to one session and it was too painful. You know, I really felt of all the things that Parkinson's threw at me, because there are lots of different symptoms that we all get, and we all deal with different things. But take away the thing that mattered so much to me, that was painful. So I didn't to begin with. But actually, I did actually, in the end, go back to the choir and sing, because there's something very uplifting about being with a group of people and singing. And in that choir, it didn't matter if your voice croaked or you were out of tune, because that's what happened. I couldn't necessarily quite get on the note anymore, but that's all right. And there's a lovely collective feeling about doing something together.
And also, you're with a group of people, some of whom are experiencing the same
exactly
thing. So you have a laugh about it, and you take strength from, I'm not the only one that this has happened to.
That's exactly it. And you don't have to put on a brave face.
Yeah.
And you understand each other and you can help each other. And that was lovely. And Nick also introduced me to a dance group that was run by his wife, Alexis. Absolutely lovely. And again, it didn't matter if you lost your balance slightly or things like that. It was the doing something together which made a big difference. And in that first year, I met people who over the 7 years since then have become very good and close friends, and I can thank them from the bottom of my heart for the help that they gave me in just showing that there is a perfectly reasonable life that you can live. You're not completely flattened by a condition which is bewildering. It is peculiar. It takes a long time to understand what it does to you. And no one has quite the same reaction to the medication that you get given. And you have to learn what happens to me, my Parkinson's. We had a neighbour many years ago whose husband had Parkinson's, and she used to refer to it as his Parkinson's. And I understand entirely what she means about that now. It's your own particular version of a condition which could have as many as up to about 70 different symptoms. It affects us all in different ways. So that one does eventually move on to that sort of realization that you can learn about it and you can learn what it does to you. But actually, I think I ought to tell you, there was, apart from talking to Nick and getting in on all these activities, there was something which kind of triggered me into thinking, this is nonsense. This is not the end of the world. You're still the same person. And that was because we had a big family wedding. And this was about 5 years ago now. And it was over in the States. And all the older generation of our family had died. And I was actually the head of the family. I am still the head of the family. But I said then, I can't possibly go over there. It'll be a 12-hour journey. I can't possibly. I was still feeling feeble and that this was something I couldn't possibly do. But my sister said to me, nonsense, you've got to go. They will want you there. This is special. And we will get you there. And I've come with you, and your daughter Vanessa can come with you, and Emma, my daughter, can come, and we'll go as a foursome, and we'll get you there. And you can go first class, and you can go and sleep on the plane if you want to. And so that's what they did. They got me there, and we were like a hen party without the bride. But we got there. But if you had told me that it was going to take 18 hours door to door for us to get to the sort of middle of the States, and that long flight, and you know what it's like at airports. You got to get there early, you hang about, it's about 3 hours before you get on the plane itself, and then the journey. But we got there, and there was a wedding, and we got back. And when we got back, I thought, goodness me, you did it. This is, you know, you can manage anything after that. And that was, I really do think that was something which pushed me into realizing that nothing had changed and I could cope with things, and that was something which I think people perhaps need something to help them feel that they're the same person all along.
I know that you were depressed for a while, and you were able to get your consultant to tweak your medication until you felt a bit better, didn't you? So the conversation with the consultant is incredibly important. What did you do to help explain to your consultant what your needs were in the medication department?
Yeah, that's interesting. I did actually keep a diary.
Uh-huh.
I did realize that taking the medication that we all get offered the same medication, which is called levodopa in it, which does help a lot, but we all have it in different levels of strength and so forth and so forth. But I realized that I wasn't getting the right sort of effect that I wanted. It kept me going throughout the day. And by keeping a little diary, I could measure how I was feeling. The sort of down moments in Parkinson's can be, and then you take a tablet and you feel better again. But you can go through the day in ups and downs. And I was trying to find a way of evening it out so that I could get on with the day. So that was what I did, and I kept a diary. And the other thing is that we are told, and this was something I remember the Parkinson's nurse saying to me and talking me through, it's very important to plan your meal times around your taking of your medication. And this is something which we all hear about, because the medication has to be absorbed through the gut, and then it has to get into the bloodstream and up into the brain, and that's a long journey for it. And if you clog up your system with food as well, particularly protein, which can compete once it gets into the bloodstream, that's not a good idea. So you have to plan your meal times, or you're taking your medication before meals, or a while afterwards. And so you're planning your whole day round. You're taking your medication, your food, your exercise. You want to do your exercise when you're feeling at your best, and you've got to take lots of water, and you've got to keep fit. And
full-time job.
It's a full-time occupation, just keeping yourself on an even keel, but you get better at it. And that is also, I think, a process that we go through of understanding how it works. And the consultant, your neurologist, can find that really helpful, because he or she can then see your ups and your downs and can see how they can tweak something or improve on the strengths of the medication or something like that. And I don't keep a diary anymore, but I think I understand what can make me feel good and what doesn't. I mean, going back to that first year, yes, I was depressed. I know, I can acknowledge now, I must have been, because I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. I dropped 3 dress sizes. I dropped about 20 kilos. I lost a lot of weight. And the nurse could see that. And she also suggested to me, would you like a little bit of counselling? No, I absolutely denied that.
I can do that by myself.
Exactly. But that was actually the case. And yes, I felt as though I was...
I think what's coming across is that you have an enormous amount of emotional intelligence and self-awareness. And this is very, very helpful. And it's good to hear for other people listening that if you can think about, A, when things are not feeling so good, and make a note so that you understand when your medication is tailing off, and you can inform your consultant and they can tweak it, and to know what's good for you. Because as you say, this is all very, very personal and individual. Everyone reacts differently, not only to the medication, but they react emotionally. Although the length of time it takes to accept the position you're in, that obviously varies, but it still takes time for you to process oh, okay, I'm accepting this. What's the best way I can deal with this?
And exactly. I mean, I think it's the stage where you get to when you feel you are in control and not the condition. You have to come to terms with the fact that you have got a condition that is not going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't. And that's a hard bit. But you can get over that when you realize that actually life doesn't need to change as much as you thought it was going to have to change. And that you can control, you are in control of things and you can do something about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been huge advances in research into Parkinson's and treatment of it. And I'm absolutely sure that the breakthroughs are on the horizon. And that is exciting. For many, many years, there was nothing. But one now realizes that it will happen. Perhaps even preventing the onset of it, who knows? Mm. But in the meantime, we have lots of ways in which we can look after ourselves.
Mm.
And help others as well. And these support groups that, well, you and I are very much involved with, I think they play such an important role in helping people to do that.
Mm. The idea of exercise, but whoever you are, you need to exercise. But certainly with Parkinson's, it's very important. You were talking about the first thing you noticed was loss of balance. Do you find that now, having done so much ballet and Tai Chi, Pilates, I guess you're more aware of your balance so you can control it better. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yes, it is. Of course, you are aware that you haven't got quite the balance you had. And I sometimes want to hold on to someone when I'm walking along the pavement or something like that. It depends. But the exercises keep you subtle. One gets all sorts of stiffness and aches and pains. And the thing about the Parkinson's condition is there are all sorts of little aches and pains, which you would probably get anyway.
Well, exactly. You're all aging anyway. So, of course, you are.
But sometimes it's hard to distinguish. Is it that or is it the other?
Yeah. So whichever it is, I've still got to do the exercise to keep myself toned and as supple as possible. And it's helpful.
It's a strange condition because it's so unpredictable. You can think you've got everything on an even keel and you have a good day and you've been busy. And then the following day, for some reason, you have a doubt and you don't think you've eaten differently or you've had a good night's sleep and everything seems, but it happens. And again, you learn not to fight it. Mm. The best thing to do is to ride out the bad days and get on with the good days.
Mm.
And that's the way things are. I think I've also found being involved with the support group that we've got, it's nice because it's nice to feel useful again, you know?
Yeah.
It's nice to see that you can contribute to something and make friends in that way.
You certainly are of huge value. There is no doubt about that. So when you consider where you were 7 years ago when you surprisingly got this diagnosis, and now 7 years on, how do you feel? You felt bewildered, shocked, a loss of identity, or fearing a loss of identity. How do you feel now?
I hope it is obvious that I feel very different and happy.
Yeah.
And I feel myself again. I mean, that's actually something that my husband said to me when it was after this great trip to America for the wedding. And I came back and started getting involved in all sorts of things. And he said to me one day, you know, you're back to your old self again.
Oh, how lovely.
And that was actually lovely.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I thought, I suppose maybe I am getting to be a bit more my old self again. Yes. So that, yes, it's been a huge learning curve. Mm. I'm in a very different place now than I was. And I hope that people who are newly diagnosed, who might be listening to this, I would only say you'll move on. Go on trying to find out as much as you can and stay talking to people. And you will, I hope, realize that it's not the end of the world. You know, Parkinson's, you can live with Parkinson's. You can.
There is life with Parkinson's.
Exactly.
That is a really great positive note to finish on. Jenny, thank you so much for all your sharing of your experience. And I know that you are a happy person, and a positive attitude is definitely the way forward. And I shall look forward to working with you on the committee for many years to come.
Well, Bibi, it's lovely working with you and with the others, and indeed with all of the group. It's good.
Yeah, we're very lucky. Well, thank you very, very much for your time, and you continue to take good care of yourself.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Jenny is in a good place, and as her husband commented, she's back to her old self after the scary start. I hope that Jenny's story has helped to inform and encourage newcomers to Parkinson's that it isn't the end of the world and that there is life after diagnosis. And thank you for listening. Do let me know who you'd like to hear from and the questions that are important to you. You can email me at pliferaft@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, goodbye and take good care of yourselves. In producing this podcast, I'd like to thank Richard Smart and Emma Brzezinski for the idea, our chairman John Amphlett, who always encourages an idea, Nick F. Gray for the original music, Mike Bailey and the team at EPLS Design for the graphics and sound editing. This is a production by Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group with permission from Parkinson's UK.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.